This is Lean Local with your host, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Lean Local. This is where we try to keep the conversation grounded in what's actually happening in Green Bay and what practical progress really looks like. I'm your host, Jim Schmidt, and today we're talking to one of my favorite people, Brian Johnson, who has had a front row seat to this committee for really the last, 10 years as director of On Broadway and 8 years on city council. And we're excited to talk about not just his district, but the city, what's been good the last 10 years. And you know, I'm interested to find out where he sees himself in the next few years, and equally as important, where does he see the city? You know, because I think, you know, you've as I said, you've had a front row seat to the downtown development through On Broadway, through city leadership. So let me ask you, what's changed the most in the last 10 years?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we talk a lot about and we advocate for is investment in those community amenities that make this a great place to live. And you know, our philanthropic support here has always been very generous, but it's been highly targeted towards basic needs, which is critically important. We're really trying to advocate for investment in community amenities now as well, because we feel like when you share that, it helps reduce the burden that sometimes is placed on our community for philanthropic needs. So we're seeing that all across the country, and I think it makes a great place to live, makes a great community, makes people want to invest here. That generates property tax revenue. It's a great cycle.
So when you look at that, and I don't want to spend too much time on history, but I think sometimes that's an indicator of the future, right, on certain things. So what turned out to be better than you expected? And then I'm going to follow up with what kind of disappointed you.
In terms of city council?
No, just really your 10 years. I mean, you're unique. Yeah. I mean, you're dead. Like I said, when I say front row seat, I'm talking courtside seat.
Sure. You know?
I mean, president of the city council and leading probably one of the most popular areas in the city. I mean, one could argue downtown Green Bay, but there's other people who would argue.
Well, they're complimentary.
Right, they're complimentary. And so anyway, I want to get back to what turned out better than you thought, and I want to know what kind of frustrated you thought would have happened that didn't.
Yeah, well, I think the, you know, community development's a slow process. Yeah. And unfortunately, we find the public oftentimes doesn't have the patience for that. And, you know, so I think when you look back at the 10 years, what turned out well? We've made a tremendous amount of progress. If you look at the amount of development and investment that's coming into our downtown area, it's significant. I always say it's the highest proportion of property taxes. So if folks like their, you know, having their lots on the outside of the city, thank the downtown, because it's that property tax base that allows that to happen. And that's why it's critically important to invest in your downtown. So I think when you look at 10 years, the progress we've made has been tremendous. When you really take a step back and look at it, what's not gone so well? Look, I like to move things fast, and sometimes it doesn't always work that way. And you're at the whim of a lot of different things, whether it's different government agencies, private investment, the economy, whatever it might be. And much like you, I always admire when you were passionate about a project, you were gonna do everything to move it forward, and just nothing got in your way. And that's probably one of the hardest things, though, is to overcome those obstacles.
It is. And I don't think people understand, you know, I've been at this a while or two, is how hard it is. I mean, it is. It's like, you know, people drive by, and I remember my kids when they were young, we'd drive through a city and they'd be like, oh, this is awesome. And I'm like, this stuff doesn't just happen. It takes leadership. There's probably some blood on the floor somewhere. I mean, it's just, it is tough to get some of this stuff done. So.
Well, in a lot of focus at a time when your attention's being drawn in a lot of other places.
Oh, yeah.
When you were mayor, you didn't get to just focus on one thing.
Right.
You still had to run a whole city. Same thing with me, much smaller scale, right? I there's big projects we're working on, but I still have to make sure the rest of the organization is tended to.
Okay. I want to stay there just for a minute, because you said, you know, things took longer. Do you have a specific project? I mean, are you going to mention the coal piles? Are you going to talk about, but you know, some stuff, just parking, you know, I don't think that's even resolved yet. And that was an issue 15 years ago, was parking on Broadway a parking facility, I should say.
Well, look, it's that old adage, right? Those who, fail to plan to fail.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we have a lot of really good plans. Sometimes they're followed, sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
And I know you know what I'm talking about. You know, and I think it's really important that we adhere to those plans, because Now they need to be updated from time to time, right? But it's what keeps your focus really sharp.
It's the framework.
Yeah, and otherwise it becomes too easy to become distracted by everything else around you and forget about what it is that you really need to be working on, whatever that issue is. And I mm-hmm. think that's something that, as an organization, we're doing really well right now. We're in the midst right now of updating our strategic plan for the Broadway District, which is just hyper-focused on the things that we think are going to make downtown Green Bay a really special place.
Good. I'm going to get to that. I also want people to know that these strategic plans that I worked on, it just wasn't the mayor's plan or Jim Schmidt's plan. I mean, it was... These plans are extensive. I mean, you've got people in there from education, from neighborhoods, to bankers, developers. You hopefully bring in some people who've done some serious traveling, saying, look, this is sustainable and this can work. And when those are abandoned for, and I'm not sure why they get abandoned for a very selfish reason, that's my opinion, that's not good. So I'm hoping that your plan has... not only your leadership, but tell me about the strategic plan for Broadway. Because really my next question is going to be, if you had only picked three priorities for the Broadway District over the next decade, what would they be? And that kind of ties into your strategic
Perfect.
Plan.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, look, I think a lot of times it's making sure that whatever plan you adopt, whether it's the city, on Broadway, any organization.
Business.
That you've got control over those decisions.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're setting objectives that maybe have priorities that require somebody else to make a decision, in order for you to move that forward, that's really challenging. And that's why I've always been an advocate when you're doing community development work or when the city's doing economic development work, site control is everything. If you don't have site control when it comes to development, you're dead in the water. So that's why I've always been a big fan of strategically acquiring properties when it makes sense and making sure that you're driving the right development, the right tax base. And that is really at the cornerstone of what's in our strategic plan. We have four big priorities. One of them, though, is just making sure that we're advancing the right real estate development, the right uses, the right density, taking advantage of vacant lots that exist all over our district for a variety of reasons, gaining site control, and getting development on those things.
Okay, so I want to get to three priorities, but obviously one of them is site control. You're not going to have a great plan and hope somebody comes in and does it.
Yeah, site control is what I would call maybe one of the priorities within the objective.
Yeah.
The objective is really about the real estate development because if you think about any great downtown, it's about density, walkability, desirability, and having things around you. When you have a bunch of vacant lots that serve no purpose, no value, that's not attractive. And so we're trying to get these amenities really into downtown. Because it's more than the building, right? It's the stores that move in there. It's the experiences that are created within those spaces.
Okay, I got to stay on this. So you mentioned. So what is the metrics for that? Is it foot traffic? Is it small business survival? Is it housing tax base? What is that? And then can I drill down? I want to get some projects. I want you to mention some projects that I can look forward to.
So we very fortunate. We were one of six programs in the country that were accepted into a pilot program through the National Main Street Center, funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Really prestigious program. And we're setting, we've been frequently told that our program is operating within the top 1% of all programs in the country.
Wow.
And that through this pilot program, we are setting the standard for how they want this to operate moving into the future. And part of it is because we took a long-term view on what we're trying to do. And so the KPI that we've put to it is we want $250 million of new development in the next 10 years.
All right, that's big.
It is.
And, I like that.
And it's because it's about driving the small development on these vacant lots to continue to push that density, but it's also recognizing that you have to take advantage of demand when it's there. And demand for us is housing. Downtowns need housing. They need residents. They need people living there. And when they're anchored with retail space on the first floor, that's what makes a good downtown development.
$250 million of tax, $250 million, you said, of development. So I'm going to probably, I want to get a word before that. Is it taxable development?
So we're looking at the number we've identified as construction, right? Because if you put money into think of Liked Park or the Shipyard, right? That's investment coming into the district.
Right.
So of that 250 is maybe 150 of it accessible, probably in that neighborhood.
Okay. All right. That's an exciting number.
It is. And we didn't just pull that number out of the sky. Part of it's developed through massing studies around where the opportunity is in the district and what's the right scale development that can happen on those parcels, and really taking a look at our pipeline. What does our investable pipeline look like right now? And we've got projects that we've identified that are one-year projects, three-year, five-year, 10-year. And you know, so this is a number that's real tangible. It's sticky.
So I think if I had to look at Broadway, I think you try a lot of things. Is that a safe statement? I think when you look at different districts, I think you try a lot. And I think some things have working, but what did you learn that doesn't work? And right? I mean, and I know that you're going to say mm-hmm. the politics doesn't always work. And that's
look, we're not afraid to fail. And I mean, if you look at anybody that's ever learned anything in life, they most likely failed at it first. And so we do that with our programming. You know, it's a little more, the stakes are higher, I guess, when there's money involved. So you have to be a little bit more risk averse. You can't be reckless. But when it comes to things like programming, we're going to try an event, see if it works. If it doesn't, we'll move on. Yeah. We're going to try different programs and services that help support our businesses. Sometimes they're received well, sometimes not. But we're very quick to pivot off and try something new, because we know that the marketplace around us is constantly changing. And if you're not evolving, you're not going to be able to meet that demand into the future.
Okay, I'm going to get to that, but let me just cut to the chase. Do you think Brian Johnson, over your last 10 years, and it sounds like you're going to stick around, I'm going to get to that later in mm-hmm. the interview, are we keeping pace with the surrounding communities, like with the suburbs? Because they drop numbers, and I should go home and verify them, but they're much smaller than we are. Mm-hmm. 20,000 people, 18,000 people, and then they drop these development numbers, and I'm like, wait a minute. We sure as hell ain't five times that. Sometimes we're not even double it. There's mm-hmm. one place we're not even equal.
Yeah, and I'll take a higher level Green Bay view on that. If we're going to be competitive, we have to be concerned about our mill rate. But it's also recognizing that we have a lot of brownfields in the city, which are contaminated sites. And so they're more challenging to build on. When you go out to the suburbs, they're greenfields. So you get a lower tax base, sites that can be shovel ready, that people can build on right away. The infrastructure is sometimes built out in those areas a little bit more aggressively than it might be on some of our areas. So we have to get more aggressive with things like our industrial parks. So aside from downtown, industrial parks are where you get the big tax base. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're doing that over in the Grandview subdivision, which is really important as proximity to the eye as well.
Right.
But if you're not thinking about, you know, an industrial or a manufacturing sector, and what that mill rate does to them in terms of influencing their choice of where they're going to build or locate, you're missing the mark. But the other piece of it where I think we're losing out is housing. There's a lot of housing being built in the suburbs around us. And and we have to find a way to escalate that. Now, I think the city's done some really good things. We've been aggressive with certain tools, but to me, it's about the relationship piece of it. How do you bring the developers and the lenders and the property owners and everybody together so that you can get these ideas out there and shovels in the ground?
Yeah. Does that bother you, the suburbs call themselves Green Bay?
I don't think it bothers me as much as I know it bothers you.
All right, well, we'll get to that. So we're with Brian Johnson. Again, you're going to be one of the top well-known people in our community. Past President of City Council, Director of On Broadway. We'll be right back with more. All right, welcome back to Lean Local. Again, the show where we do what's in our title. We lean into what's going on locally here in Greater Green Bay. And we're talking with Brian Johnson about the Broadway District. We're going to get to the Green Bay Public Market in just a second. But before we went to break, we're kind of talking about, Green Bay, right? I mean, we're by far the largest municipality in the county. I always said that, things will stem where the heart of the community and, everything pulses from the heart. But we're talking about the suburbs. And Brian, you had said that they're not doing a better job, but they're really focused on housing, whereas I don't think they were 15 years ago. I mean,
housing is in such high demand still. And I know a lot of people like to question it, but we do the studies. And at the end of the day, these developers aren't going to be sticking money into a product that they can't recover. So the demand is there. And it's almost, I hate to draw it, but a comparison to like almost an arms race, but you know, that's what it turns into. Where everybody's, who can get the housing in the ground the fastest.
And I think you're right, because I think from the outside, it can feel like growth is happening outside the city. You know, you just drive around. And some people don't know where the municipal boundaries are. I mean, I will say that. That happens all the time. It's like, you know, Green Bay is great. It's like
Lambeau Field's in Ishwaubenon.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, which it's not. But what are the suburbs doing better right now? Or is it, like you said, the brownfield versus greenfields?
I think it's the red tape. And I think the city
That's not good.
No, and I think the city's done a good job with rectifying some of that. I think we can do better. And I tell you what, I was at a national conference last week, and the governor of Oklahoma spoke. He said, hey, we are a 30-day state. If from the day you submit your permit, you will have it in 30 days, and if you don't, it's free. And what I love about that message is it sets the tone for what you expect. For what developers can expect from you, but also what your employees, you know, it sets a clear expectation for them.
Instead of us standing up and saying, look, we are a 30-month community.
Right.
You know?
Right. Now, and I've even heard some people suggest that it should be 30 days and then it's automatically approved.
Well,
I'm not as comfortable with that.
No, that's a little risky.
But I do think that, you know, the bigger you get, the more bureaucratic you become. And nobody sets out to be that, but it happens because you're large and people have specialties in certain areas. And I think of a sign permit. It used to be when you'd come downtown, you would have to submit 3 different applications to get a sign permit.
No.
And why can't that be on one application? And it took a communication for me to make that change, right? And so sometimes it's just about simplifying these processes. It's a death by a thousand cuts, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But if you don't start, you know, hauling in some of those cuts, you're never going to make real progress.
And it's, yeah, I don't know why all that red tape was added. And, you know, but the other thing is that I think the suburbs have, and I know you have 1,000 employees. I don't want to be critical of any department, but some of it seems a little bureaucratic. And we are a larger city, mm-hmm. and I get that. You know, do you need 1,000 employees? You know, I don't know. I didn't have that many when I was there. But I think when you're the best city in the country 3-4 years ago, mm-hmm. always in the top 10. And I just want to say this, and I've said this before when you were on the show, I don't know, last year, but you really got to hire the best talent, and sometimes you got to wait for the best talent. But you guys made some mistakes. I mean, you brought in that planning developer who was useless, and he couldn't find a job. DePier said they didn't want him, and then you guys hired him, and that was a huge mistake, and that hurt the city a lot. So I just hope that we've all learned from that, because there's talent out there. And yeah, I love local talent as much as anybody else, but you know, you travel a lot, but everybody knows Green Bay, right? I mean, that you run into?
Look, and
not
I think,
everybody, but. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I find the people that are down on Green Bay the most are oftentimes the people who have lived here their whole lives. Sometimes you don't realize, you know, what you've got.
Yeah.
And yet when you talk to visitors or people who relocate here, they're just in love with the city.
Oh, yeah.
The quality of life that we have here, the access to amenities,
right.
It is still a very affordable community,
right.
Though we have to recognize that it's not affordable for everyone and we have work to do there. And so I think we're really fortunate to live in a place like this.
Yeah.
And we have to care for it. We have to take care of it to make sure that it remains that type of place.
And I think the locals will do that. But I'm not afraid of looking outside, you know, especially I spent all the time on the U.S. Mm-hmm. Conference of Mayors. And, you know, I know the mayor's not going to move. But I had a guy in Cleveland come up to me one time and just said, you know, man, my bags are packed. And, you know, mm-hmm. And Cleveland has done a good job. I mean, they got another mistake on the lake and all that. But he showed me some of the stuff he did, and I was like, holy mackerel.
Yeah, look, it's a little bit like the draft philosophy. I want the best talent on the board.
Right. I mean, and we'll find a place.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, the difference, though, is the draft, you get drafted. whereas here, we have to find a way to attract those people here. And it's no secret. It's always been challenging to get people to commit to move here. But once we get them here, we can't get rid of them. But the other part of it is the compensation. And now we're fortunate the cost of living is lower than some of these other cities. So we have to be able to communicate that effectively, that while your salary might be lower, you don't need as much here. But
I don't know. But, you know, I mean, you read the same stuff I do. Mm-hmm. Salary is not everything.
It's not. And that's why being It sounds trivial, but when you're ranked the number one best place to live in America, milk that for the next decade.
Yeah.
And we have to tell that story.
When we had that and then you brought in this clown, I just was like, I was so damn mad. I called you about that too. And you know, you're like, well, I didn't know he got refused into PR. I'm like, well, you're the president of the council. How come I knew and you didn't know? But anyway, you moved on from that. And I think that's good. You know, I just think that, but leadership can't be underrated. Well, you know, it sets the tone. It sets the standard. It sets the vision.
Look, in Green Bay is out. You know, we're this mid-sized city. I've always said we're a tweener, right? We're not big enough sometimes to have these amenities, but we're too big to function like a smaller community. And oftentimes, we've had department heads that are still doing the work. And I recall the conversation I had with our new public works director, and I told her, I said, "Look, if you're an engineer, that's great. I'd rather that you're not working as an engineer. I want you to be a department head and marshal those resources as effectively as possible." And she's been doing a phenomenal job with that. But I think all of our department heads, I would love to see that. The reality is sometimes we don't have enough resources or depth, you know, to be able to do that.
Yeah, this is what makes a city work. I mean, is the people. I mean, 80% of your budget is people. So I want to get back to, we're going to get another quick break here. We get to the news and the weather. But then when we come back, I kind of want to talk about the current leadership. And we're talking to Brian Johnson, the past president of the city council, the director of On Broadway. We're going to be right back. This is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt. All right, welcome back. This is Lean Local. And today we're trying to make big civic projects understandable in the plans. I'm back here with Brian Johnson, of course, who is the director of On Broadway and served on the city council for the last 8 years, 4 years as president?
2 years.
2 years as president. Yep. Okay, all right. So here we are. Let me ask you, what's your assessment of the newly elected city council?
Well, we got a lot of passionate people on the council. I like that. I would say it took a little bit of a swing. You know, I think we were very moderate before, and you had sort of, I would call them, I don't even want to talk about it in terms of partisanship, but voting blocks. But there were just enough in the middle that every issue was really up for debate. And now I think that pendulum is going to swing. And so what I hope doesn't happen is that it squashes conversation and discussion and conflict, good conflict, right, that helps make policy better. But, you know, that remains to be seen, so.
You know, I've been around a little bit longer than you, but it sure seemed partisan to me from just the outsider. And people sent me their literature, even though I'm not in their district. Mm-hmm. No, it's probably because of the radio show. And plus, you know, I mean, I know a little bit of what's going on. And I was just surprised that, like, I would never run as a block. Like, even if I had friends.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid you're going to vote as a block. And if that's the case, then we're in trouble.
Look, I entirely agree. And I think I would say the past hasn't been partisan.
No, I agree.
But this election absolutely has been. And, you know, you're seeing a lot of out-of-town PAC dollars, over $200,000 that came out of town to buy these city council races. And, you know, that's going to have a real effect. I mean, those folks are answering to somebody. And I hope it's to the residents that put them there. And I'm not questioning anybody. I'm not questioning anybody's integrity, but it's certainly one of those things where anytime you have that type of outside influence that comes into these elections, it can be really easy to be swayed around certain partisan policy issues. And I want to make sure that we are continued to be focused on local needs.
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, wish, hope, that's not a strategy. I mean, I'm concerned about it because you got to admit, when I was there and when you were first there, it was nonpartisan. I mean, people, I'd give talks and they're like, "You Republican or Democrat?" You know, I just never led with it. And it just seems like...
We never talked about it.
No.
You had difference of opinion, but that's very different than...
But why? Why? What's changed?
I think, just kind of a personal assessment, I think... parties have taken a much stronger interest in local races, recognizing that that is the place where they can cultivate candidates for other offices. But I also think, you know, Northeast Wisconsin is one of the most hotly contested areas in the entire country. This is one of the biggest and busiest media markets around election time. Wall Street Journal several years ago printed, "Hey, the path to the White House is through Green Bay, Wisconsin,
and
Brown County, right?
Door County.
Yeah. So it's a real thing, right? And I think parties are recognizing that, and as a result, they are investing more in these local races, even at the school board level.
Yeah. That makes me want to talk about school board, but that makes me not want to talk about them too. Well, I've only got 10 minutes and 10 seconds left here, and there's some other stuff I kind of want to talk to you about. But I want to talk about this partisan for a couple more questions, because I think it's a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a slippery slope for the voters too. I don't think they understand what city council does, and I don't think they understand what the county does. And I was on the county mm-hmm. board, and even back then, nonpartisan, there, you know, I remember I did this, it's called a rapid response card. I just sent them out, and I think I didn't get a lot. I got 40 back, maybe 45 back. And I just went and knocked on, I was on the county board. I went and knocked on Tony Tyson's door, city guy, and I said, mm-hmm. here's 40 of them. You know, it was all city stuff. So I think when people look at the county, I'm not sure they understand the airport, the library, you know, some of the county roads. And I think when they look at the city, I'm not sure they understand the impact the city has on their lives. I mean, that the tax, not just the tax rate, which has gone up too much, but the just the garbage and mm-hmm. everything. That's, and then everybody comes out and votes for the presidential election. And, you know, I think that's cool, but it's much higher, the governor, and then mm-hmm. we got this local spring election. And I don't know, part of me says, well, because it's partisan, will that help voter turnout? Is that a good idea? Or is to keep it nonpartisan and then people... Like yeah. the whole, let me rephrase the question. Do people know what you do?
No. I think there are certainly some people that do. I think a lot of folks end up in my voicemail or on the phone with me by accident because they had an issue and then they were routed to me. Mm-hmm. When we door knock, a lot of times, the last question, or you know,
yes. Stop
do you vote
funding
on
Ukraine.
School? Do you vote yeah, on right. this? Right? They don't know. So it's. But I think to your point before, you know, I think one of the reasons you look at the block, right, the Progressive Six that ran together. I think that's exactly what they're trying to do is mobilize or rally that voting base
right.
because it's easy, right? It's a yeah. common denominator. And, oh, you're yeah. progressive, okay. And when you look at the districts they ran in the partisan elections, they predominantly lean left.
Right.
So it's the easy way to help mobilize voters that way.
Right.
And you know, and I think both parties are going to be doing it. I think locally here, the Democratic Party has been much more aggressive and probably much more effective at doing it. But I don't think the Republicans are going to be very far behind in the near future.
Yeah, again, that's not the answer I want to hear, but like I respect you.
I don't want okay. that answer either.
It's
just an observation.
I
don't like it.
The mayor and the county executive to remind people this is nonpartisan. This is nonpartisan, and we are here. It's worked for, 172 years? I don't know how long I've been here, but it should continue to work that way. But
I've always ran as a nonpartisan,
yeah,
and I never cared about your political affiliation. If I needed to secure support around something, I was going to talk to whoever I had to to make that happen for my district or for our city. And I think that's why moderates have had an interesting degree of success, I think, in the last few terms, because it was a couple of us who have sort of straddled in the middle, who have been able to appeal to both voting blocks for different reasons,
right.
but they needed the moderates to
right.
get votes over the finish line. So
right.
we had just an uncanny amount of influence sometimes around the contested policies. The reality is 95% of what we do goes through uncontested, but that 5%,
oh, yeah.
right, that's
right.
where the rubber meets the road.
All right, 6 minutes. So we're going to fast forward. I'm going to ask you to stick around. We have a podcast that people can download. It's just called The Green Bay Way. I own that name on the title, and I want to get into a couple more things. But while we have this radio audience with us, fast forward 10 years. What would success look like? I want to talk about Broadway. I want to go back mm-hmm. and you're going to stick around on Broadway, I'm assuming. I have some questions on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel that. I don't have anything to base on. If you're not, let me know. But anyway, let's get to the question. What would success actually look like on Broadway?
So I think a lot of times when Main Street programs like ours invest in programming and events, it's because you're trying to fabricate activity. You're fabricating it because there's gaps, meaning that the private market isn't doing it on its own because you don't have enough density or enough activation in your property. So you have the wrong type of activation. And instead of having, for example, a retailer on a ground floor, maybe you have an office user or a lower use, lower impact use. So I think 10 years from now, it's that we're properly balanced in terms of the types of stores that we have. I think we have more retail. Retail is not dead. 90% of all shopping still occurs in a storefront.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I think we need to remember that. And it's artisan retail and small scale manufacturing that continues to thrive in downtowns. It's about building that experience economy. We want our private sector, our private businesses to create the reason that people come downtown and have enough things for them to do so that they're not just coming to get their haircut and leaving. They can come down and experience multiple things on that trip. So.
Okay, I would agree with all that. There's two concerns I have. I'm just not former mayor stuff, just Jim Schmidt. I work on Broadway, right off Broadway, so I'm down there every day. Brian, there's just too damn many trucks. There just are. Brian, so 2 days ago, there was a logging truck with not just logs, like those like huge logs, like the Redwood Forest logs, but had a trailer attached to it. Okay, he's the only guy that got through the light on the turn. Mm-hmm. Like, why? And I think the truck traffic has increased. And then it's anecdotal, but I work.
Yeah,
there.
I don't know the answer.
Okay, I know, but whatever. I was going to call you one time and say every other vehicle is a truck. That's not true. That's just me exaggerating. But you know, and I know the whole it's a state highway. That's always been the excuse. But like, I don't like excuses. I remember when we couldn't do the Northland Hotel, we couldn't do because our tax credits weren't good enough. And Greg Flishman, who I'm a big fan of his still, and Kevin's, he came in and he goes, you know, we can't increase our tax credits for historic buildings because it's a state law. Well,
change the law.
Exactly. And it took him a long time, but boy, he bust his butt doing that. He went to all those committee meetings. He dragged me down there a couple times. So I just don't like that. It's like, you know, people in the county board, I'm like, why don't you have term limits? Well, state won't let us. Well, not true. It's a law, but you could, if you really, really wanted to, you could change that, you know? And it's like, I say to these suburbs, why don't you guys, you know, call yourself, you know, Howard or Schwabadon? It's like, it's the way it is. Well, no, if you lobbied for your own post office, you could sever the apron strings with us. But, you know, so I don't.
But look, like, I hope you're encouraged to know at least that it's in our strategic plan. To put effort into the relocation of that truck route.
I think that's a great idea. I think that it's going to help you. You're going to do it and you're going to say, oh my God, I knew it was going to work. Brian knew it was going to work this well.
Well, you may recall we tried to do this when you were mayor and the council at the time wouldn't support the study.
Right.
Not even the study.
No, that's and, it was a bad council.
Yeah. And you know, of course, question could be why didn't I move it forward? And there were different reasons for that. But I think now we're at a good spot where we can properly contemplate that type of discussion. I think we've got a council. Hopefully they'll be open-minded about it as well.
And I think if they're rewrote like that logging truck, but I don't want to pick on companies because I understand they employ people, but it's the shortest route. I don't think it's the safest route. I don't think it's actually the quickest route. I will say it's the shortest route, but like I would be open to some kind of, if they stay on the highways, you know, they loop around, that we would reimburse them for extra miles incurred or something. Sure. Yeah, I don't know. There's got to be formula.
But you got to have the data, first and foremost. And that was the study, the point of origination destination study. So where are those trucks coming and going? When, you know, we have assumptions, but you need the data to show where that is because I tell you what, a lot of those trucks, in my estimation, could probably be going down to 172.
Absolutely.
And into that area.
Especially when you know where they're going. It's like, why are you clogging up this intersection when people aren't going to dine outside with all those smokestacks.
Exactly. And it is a deterrent
to
the development.
I'm glad you're working on that. I, you know, even though I'm just a radio guy teaching, but if there's anything I can do to help that, I think that's a bigger solution than I think everyone thinks.
Right.
And look, I'm Mr. Business, but I think there's a way that we could work together on that.
Look, and the guy that just got elected that's replaced me, he's a civil engineer. So
he was on our show.
I'm going to be working hard to turn him into an advocate on this one. And,
okay, me too.
But you'll have the expertise, I think, that we'll be able to look at this too.
All right. We're wrapping up here. But stick around. I want to talk to you on the podcast. But I just want to tell you, as someone who knows you and has worked with you for years, I just really appreciate what you've done. I mean, this city is better because of you.
Well, I appreciate that. It takes a village, and you've done a lot of good work over the years, and a lot of people have. And None of us can do it alone.
No. So we just got
to keep
the pressure on. And it's, you know, I mean, like I said, I think you've traveled more than anyone I know. It's a great place.
It's fantastic. There's a reason I stay here.
Yeah, right. Are your kids here? My kids moved, and I don't think they're coming back. Yeah. It's like, oh, I busted my butt.
I have one in college in Waukesha, and she really likes it down there. And the other one is in Kiel, which is, I mean, just an awesome small
city.
That
is a great group. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. All right. Well, it's all good. Well, anyway, we got to get them to move to Green Bay because that's...
I'm working on it.
All right. I'll help you if I can. All right. With Brian Johnson, president of On Broadway, city council president. Thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
All right. We're back for our final segment after just telling Brian how great he was. We'll keep that point how great he is, but we're going to dig down a little bit deeper to some of his projects he's working on. In our first segment, we talked about one of your main focuses right now as director of On Broadway is a strategic plan. And a strategic plan is a long-term plan that has buy-in from the mm-hmm. community. And I'm sure it's specific, measurable, the whole SMART goal thing. Mm-hmm. It's attainable, it's realistic, and it's timely. And I think you said your strategic plan is out 10 years? Is
that 5 years.
5 years.
Yep.
No, that's fast. I mean, that's cool.
We have a hardworking team. We don't mess around.
That's cool. So you mentioned housing. You mentioned, you know, retail. And I asked about what are the metrics? Is it foot traffic? Is it property value? How do you really measure it? And I'm sure there's multiple things. But let's talk about specifics. You know, mm-hmm. Brian Johnson's here today, and you're going to come back here, I'm sure, every year. But what are they? What are we going to see?
Well, look, I think anybody who's in the field of community development wants to know that they made a difference, that you can look back and tangibly and physically see some of the improvements you made. And some of those are sort of those front page headlines, like the pavilion that we're building at Liked Park. And other times there are small scale interventions, like hanging a string of lights above a dark alleyway.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you know, you need these things to be happening at different levels within the pipeline. And I think back, gosh, a few years ago, we did what was called the Better Block Project. And we put Dousman Street on a road diet. And we said, what if we took the four lanes down, one lane in each direction, yeah. and we added the parklets, and we added the crosswalks and the bike lanes and all this stuff. And it's crazy to look back at the time when we did that. Fast forward now, and we literally just created a design for Dousman Street to go down to that and add parking lanes. We've got an alleyway improvement project that we're working on.
Right.
Parklets are now a thing. They're allowed in the city because of that event.
Right.
And so it's that's why you do these interventions, so that you can see what the long-term improvements are that can help make a great community.
So not the elephant in the room, but I do want to talk about the public market. Mm-hmm. That started off with unbelievable fanfare. And I looked at that. That's a great concept. I mean, I remember a guy said he wanted to build a Space Needle downtown. I said, that's a great concept too, but you know, yeah. Is it realistic? And again, and it was a different time, but it was decided internally that it wasn't realistic. It's just the mm-hmm. money wasn't there. Now, you took a little different strategy compared to what we were going to do, but you have a lot of government money in that project, and we had very little. And look, maybe you're right and we were wrong, but and I know it's going to open before the draft, and somebody got mm-hmm. in front of the press and said 1 million visitors, which is more than we get at Lambeau. I'm like, okay, they got to throttle that number back. But
I don't think so, and I'll challenge you on that.
All right, cool. Yeah. Let's do it. But no, I want to see the project, Brian. I mean, I don't want to debate you on whether it's 1 million people mm-hmm. or 400,000. Look, 400,000 I'd be happy with, but you know, like I said, I drive by there four times a day, and yeah. it just seems...
Yeah, I think our biggest mistake in all of this was being overly ambitious about the draft, right? And I have a board of directors I report to. I have a capital campaign that's working on this, and everybody recognized the opportunity that the draft presented. And the hope and the intent was that if we rally around that date, that the funders would come in more quickly. Problem is, everybody else was thinking the same thing, right? And so... sadly, that didn't happen, and not entirely because the funders didn't come in, but because the project costs escalated so much, and other projects were impacted by the same thing around our community, and some of them were even stalled midway through their projects. So, you know, I think our biggest mistake again was just setting out that expectation, and you know, that we did it. And so, how do you recover? So, the reality is the amount of time that we've spent on this campaign is no different than any other project of similar scope and size. And it just takes time to pull these things together. The amount of government money coming to this actually is really not that much, comparatively speaking to other projects. It really is being anchored by private support and financing and new market tax credits. Those are your primary funding sources. By comparison, look at Madison. Madison Public Market under construction right now. Same size construction budget, $24 million. $21 million of their $24 million is government funded.
Yeah, that's great. That's
now, I mean, if we had that, we'd be done. We'd be open.
That's not what government's job is. If it's meant to be, the private sector's
right.
Gonna...
And that's, and I draw that comparison, not to diminish Madison, but to show that our philanthropic community supports this. And they've really stepped up in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
We just have to close the last bit of margin here.
So what is the status? I mean, I'm not the only one that drives by and thinks.
Yeah, it's a complicated stack. Think about Hortel Northland, right?
Oh, yeah.
When you got stalled and you just have to figure out how to tweak these things because if you're short in one bucket, you want to elevate in another, but
if, and they're connected.
They're all connected. Yeah. And so, it's one of the conversations we have around, okay, what if we defer pieces of the project to bring down the construction cost? Well, now your assessable value goes down. If your assessable value goes down, you can't borrow as much.
Yeah.
If you can't borrow as much, you can't get as much in new market tax credit. Okay. So there's these domino effects with every bucket that is really hard sometimes to forecast. So, but we're working on it, and we're getting really close here.
Okay, but I safely assume that in your strategic plan, which is your 5-year plan, 3 major projects, that's one of them.
Oh yeah, we've got. I mean, a public market, Liked Park. It was kind of crazy to try to run 2 capital campaigns at the same time, but we did it because the opportunity would have passed us by otherwise. I sometimes have to remind folks that the request in front of the Redevelopment Authority was $750,000 from the closing TID to build a bathroom. That's what Lake Park could have been. And because we stepped up and said, how about the city puts in a little bit more and we'll raise private funds to match you, and now we're going to get this beautiful venue.
Yeah, that thing's going to be great.
So to me, if
but that also has that, But there was some money out there for you, right? I mean, there's some government money in that thing.
Right. It's going to be half and half, right?
Okay,
there was
a
surplus in the TID.
Right.
And
I think that's great.
Yeah, it had to be spent somehow within the TID according to the plan. And that was what we were able to get prioritized. The shipyard, of course, finishing that up. And then we've got a really cool plan. We're working on the Hubbard Street corridor. So where that red sculpture is right now.
Yeah.
Think of that like a town square where the streets can blend in with that site. But it can be a woo nerf. So it can be a passable street when there's no programming going on. But when you want to expand it, it becomes a larger town square.
Those are cool things. And that's what downtowns are made of. All right, 15 seconds. Just a few more questions. I want to just drill down on it because this is what excites people more than...
A few more questions in 15 seconds.
No. We're going to join us on the other side on the Green Bay Way. It's our podcast. And we're going to talk there for a few minutes. Just again, thank you for being with us, Brian Johnson.